The holiday of Sukkot is known as Zman Simchatenu, the time of our rejoicing. And it's interesting to note that of the three festivals, it is Sukkot specifically whose whole focus is the concept of Simcha, the concept of joy. And as the Matnat Chaim notes, a very obvious question, when we talk about the holiday of Pesach, we refer to it as Zman Chayrutenu, the time of our redemption. It marks an historical event that occurred where the Jewish people were redeemed from Egypt. Likewise, Shavuot is referred to as Zman Matan Toratenu, the time of the receiving of the Torah, which also marks an historical event that happened on Shavuos. The question we need to ask is, when we refer to Sukkot as Zman Simchatenu, the time of our rejoicing, what historical event are we referring to? We know that the Sukkot comes to remind us of either the physical Sukkot the Jewish people lived in during their sojourn in the desert, or the Anane Akavo, the clouds of glory, those miraculous clouds that paved the way, that ironed their clothes, that protected them from enemies and from the elements that surrounded the Jews in the desert. In either case, whether it was Sukkot Mamash or whether it was the protective clouds, these clouds came to the Jewish people as soon as they started the sojourn. So we would think to have the holiday of Sukkot, if it were indeed marking an historical event, on Nisan time, which is a very famous question that's asked. So we need to understand, why do we celebrate Sukkot when we celebrate it? And specifically, why is Sukkot called Zman Simchatenu? We're commanded to be joyful on every holiday. Why is the focus such a focus of Simcha, of joy, on Sukkot? We know that part of the simcha of Sukkot was not only living in the sukkah and the four minim, the lul of the esrog, the hadas, and the arava, which we're told the samachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem, to rejoice in front of God, but there was a very famous ceremony referred to as the simchas beit ha-shoeva, the drawing of water, which was also done with an unparalleled amount of joy as well. The Mishnah tells us that there were sparkling waters of the Shiloach stream, were drawn in golden bucklets and brought up to the altar of the Beis HaMikdash, where they were poured into a silver basin. Open at the bottom of the basin, let the water spill into a cavity within the altar walls, which led into the deep underground foundations of the temple. And the ritual took place to the accompaniment of music and celebration of unprecedented proportions. So we need to understand further, this whole ceremony of the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the drawing of the water. What was the simcha in drawing out water? What's the big deal of pouring water and making such a big to-do about this? And further, it's interesting to note that those who really participated in the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the Mishnah tells us, were the rabbis, were the great leaders. They were the ones who juggled and danced and sang all night. It wasn't the simple people. What is this about the pouring out of the water? What is this about the simcha of the pouring out of the water? And why specifically the great people? We also need to understand, in relationship to Sukkot, is the whole symbolism of the sukkah in general. What does the sukkah come to teach us? What is it supposed to remind us? And finally, we know there's a custom of reading Kohelet, the book of Ecclesiastics, on Sukkot. And we know that Kohelet is the most depressing of all books in the Bible. Hevel Havalim, everything is vanity. Ein Chadash Shachar HaShemesh, there's nothing new under the sun. It seems a little bit strange that the holiday which we're speaking about, which had such unprecedented joy, is the holiday that we speak about such a depressing book of Kohelet. It seems out of character to this time, to the theme of Sukkot in general. So to be able to try to get a handle on all of these questions, I'd like to really look at two levels, which are really two sides of one coin, to try to understand what is the nature of the simcha, the nature of rejoicing that we find on Sukkot. To gain a glimpse into what Sukkot is about historically, there's a beautiful explanation of the Gra, the Gaon of Vilna. And he points out, based on a verse in Shir Shirim and Songs of Song, that our celebration of Sukkot does not only commemorate the clouds of glory, but also marks the return after their absence since the sin of the golden calf. At that moment of the fateful transgression, when Israel proved no longer worthy of extraordinary divine revelation, the clouds of glory disappeared. The long tshuva process began, culminating with the descent of Moshe Rabbeinu from Mount Sinai on Yom Kippur. With the evidence of forgiveness in hand, the second tablets for the new world of tshuva. Explains the Gra that yes, we got those Anunei Akava, we got those clouds of glory right after we left Egypt. But likewise, we lost those clouds of glory as soon as the Jewish people sinned at the Chaita Egel, the sin of the golden calf. And from the time of the sin of the golden calf, which happened on the 17th day of Tammuz, until Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in the tshuva process, trying to bring the people back to a relationship with God, to reinstatement with God. And then the Gra notes the following. The very next day, the day after Yom Kippur, the 11th of Tishrei, Moshe gathered together the nation and told them about the preparation for the Mishkan. And during the 3 days that followed, the entire nation of Israel was profoundly occupied with gathering the materials for the sacred task of erecting a dwelling place for the Holy Shekhinah. On the 15th of Tishrei, these preparations were completed, and the actual work for construction began, and that's when the clouds of glory returned. So this offers us a new insight into Sukkot and its place in our past and present. The clouds of glory are not merely clouds of protection, but clouds of forgiveness. The salvation granted after the sin of the golden calf restored the Jewish people once again to its position of being chosen from among the nations with a special relationship of closeness to God. The 15th of Tishrei is an historical time. It's a time when the clouds of glory return to the Jewish people. Therefore, it's a time of simcha, a time of joy, because it was a time that we clearly understood that we were forgiven. So it's as if the three festivals mark three different periods. Pesach leaving Egypt, Shavuos receiving the Torah, and now the 15th day of Tishrei Sukkot is the day where we're reinstated to this close relationship of God that we had achieved at the time of the Exodus and receiving of the Torah. However, the question remains, if indeed the whole aspect of Sukkot is to recall the historical experience of the clouds of glory returning, and that's a sign of forgiveness, then we would have anticipated to find, as Samat Nat Chaim, that these clouds of glory would have returned not on the 15th day of Tishrei when they began the Mishkan, the tabernacle, but if they're a sign that God has indeed forgiven the people, so one would have anticipated to find this when? At the time of the forgiveness, on Yud Tishrei, on Yom Kippur. So in a sense, if it's really the clouds of glory to show God's forgiveness, so how come the clouds of glory were not returned immediately when God forgave us? When God said, Salach, Tikivarech, I forgive you. So that should have been the time that we would have expected and anticipated the clouds of glory to return. So that's why we have to understand that these clouds of glory have a much deeper significance to them, not just the simplistic view of the forgiveness of God to the Jewish people. This deeper view is based on the concept that we have in the Avinu Malkeinu. We say, Katvenu, Avinu Malkeinu, Katvenu b'sefer Zchuyot. We ask God, our King, our Father, write us in a book of Zchuyot, write us in a book of merit. So the obvious question is, what do you mean, write us in the book of merit? Either we're deserving to be in the book of merit, or we're not deserving to be in the book of merit. But if we understand what this concept of Avinu Malkeinu, Katvenu b'sefer Zchuyot is about, we can understand on a deeper level what Sukkot is all about. When we say, quoting from the Rosh Beis HaTalmud of Kelm, if we understand what we say in Avinu Malkeinu B'Sefer Zchuyot, we're asking God, please God, write us in a book that allows us to do mitzvot in the future. What we're saying to God is, we know there's a concept of Megalgalin Zchus HaYidei Zakat. Kadosh Baruch Hu has good things happen to good people. So we're turning to God when we ask, write us in the book of Chuyot. We're saying to Kadosh Baruch Hu, if you have Eza Shlichut L'davar Tov, you have a mission to do something good, you want something positive accomplished in this world, Da, no, God, She'ani Tamin Muchan U'Muzuman L'yot Shaliach, that I am constantly ready to be your emissary for this. And I want you to bother me, so to speak, with this mitzvah. because I want to be somebody who good things are going to happen to. And what he says is that this concept of Katveinu B'Sefer Zechuyot is really all of our Nitzchiyos. Our entire eternity is based on that one phrase. Where we're asking a Kadosh Baruch Hu saying that we know that the only way we can achieve anything in this world of value is through mitzvot. So please God, any opportunity you have, make me that emissary. Make me that shaliach. I'm looking forward to. I want to. I'm anticipating. Please shower down upon me as many mitzvot as you can. As the Matna Chaim I heard once say on a tape so beautifully, that every time a mitzvah comes knocking at our door, it's really Malchei Rachamim, angels of mercy coming to our door. Every mitzvah is an opportunity of Tova V'chesed Mim Hashem. It's a ability of God's goodness and kindness that are raining down on us. When that schnorrer comes to the door and knocks on the door for money, we don't look at them as a schnorrer. We look at them as Malchei Rachamim, angels of mercy accompanying this person. And we say, wow, what an opportunity to get a chesed, a kindness from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Thank you, God, for the opportunity of giving me this mitzvah. Avinu Malkeinu Katveinu B'Sefer Zechuyot, please write me in a book where I'll have more opportunities to perform mitzvahs. That's our whole mindset. And this mindset, says the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, is in particular essential after Yom Kippur. Because even if a Kadosh Baruch Hu forgives us and wipes the slate clean, that still doesn't mean that we are necessarily reinstated in a good company with God. We know this in terms of interpersonal relationship. You may have had some friction with somebody, and you call them up before Yom Kippur and you say, Are you Malchami? Do you forgive me? So, okay, things are forgiven. You're now what we call on neutral, on par of ground. But does that mean that person's going to trust you? Does that mean the person's going to call you up and ask you for favors? Does that mean the person's going to share their difficulties with you and confide in you as in before? Not necessarily. What we're asking from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, explains to Shari Tshuva Rabbeinu Yonah, is not only that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should forgive us, but we should also find Ratzon, Lafek, Ratzon Mashem V'Shiach Potzbahem. Kadosh Baruch Hu should desire us. That Kadosh Baruch Hu should want to continue this close relationship with us. That's what we desire. Yom Kippur gives us the kapara, the forgiveness, the tara, the purity. But there's no guarantee that we have the reinstated relationship that we would have before Yom Kippur started. And that's why the clouds of glory did not return immediately. It was as if a Kadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm giving the Jewish people an opportunity to come close to me through the building of the Mishkan. It's as if the people themselves said, please give us an opportunity that we can show you how much we love you. Tshuva, Yom Kippur is a wonderful level. But now, practically, let's speak about the relationship. Will you call me up to ask me to do favors? Will you confide in me? By Kadosh Baruch Hu giving us the mitzvahs of the Mishkan, by the people so enthusiastically, they had to have a proclamation, stop bringing things. By the people's response, this clearly showed the reinstatement of the relationship. And therefore, what is the simcha on Sukkot? It's not only the symbol of forgiveness, it's much deeper than that. It's the symbol of forgiveness, of the reinstatement of the relationship, where God is giving us a mitzvah, where God's giving us an opportunity to come closer to Him, which is a statement of saying, God says, I love you. I'm coming back to you. I want you to come back to me. Let's come back to where we left off before the sin of the golden calf, as symbolized by the clouds of glory. And that's why, when we celebrate Sukkot every year, what we are really celebrating is the opportunity that God gives us right after Yom Kippur to immediately be involved in so many mitzvahs, to look for the best lulav and etrog, to build a nice sukkah, to beautify the sukkah. We're immediately involved in the yantif preparations, the cooking for yantif. We're involved immediately. We throw ourselves into yantif to show a Kadosh Baruch Hu, thank you so much that not only did you forgive us, but immediately you've given us mitzvahs to do, and in these mitzvahs allow us to show that we have indeed found favor in your eyes, and that relationship is once again back to where it originally was. And this explains a very famous statement in the Talmud. The Talmud says that if it should rain on Sukkot, it's like a servant who pours a cup for his master, and the master just rejects the cup, throws it back in his face. Which Rashi explains, it means that if it rains on Sukkot, it's a sign of rejection from God, it's a sign of klala. And the obvious question is, there are many times we try to do mitzvot, and for whatever reasons, our plans are thwarted. But we never have this harsh language as if it's been thrown back in our face, as if a Kadosh Baruch Hu rejects it. Why do we have the model by Sukkot? It's as if the cup of water is just thrown back in our face. So according to what we're explaining now, it makes a lot of sense. What we're explaining is that once Yom Kippur is over, we understand that the mitzvahs of Sukkot are the mitzvahs that allow us to reconnect to God. If it's going to rain on Sukkot, that's a sign that Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I wasn't completely happy with your Yom Kippur this year. I'm not completely happy with your tshuva, and therefore to a certain degree I am rejecting one of the mitzvahs I have given you. I'm not accepting it. And that's a sign for us. It's not just a question of sukkah, we can't sit in the sukkah. But no, it's a sign of a much deeper level about the whole concept of katvein of a sefer tzchuyos. Write us in the book of merit, Kadosh Baruch Hu not allowing us that opportunity of closeness to God. And this, my friends, is really the key of sukkah. The key of Sukkot, the key of Zman Simchaseinu, is the key of being able to come closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu through the doing of the mitzvot. That mitzvot are opportunities of closeness to God. Mitzvot are opportunities to find favor in God's eyes, to bring about that reconnection of the relationship. And that's why we find in the Sefer Charedi that Shilafi Rov HaSimcha Yigdal Scharo. Based on the joy of a mitzvah, that's how much reward a person receives. And they explain it to mean, she'yadua she'ikar schar mitzvah l'simcha. We know that the main essence of the reward of a mitzvah is on the simcha. Why? Because the simcha, the joy in a mitzvah, is not an extra detail of the mitzvah, but rather it is the whole essence of the mitzvah. We find the completion of the mitzvah in the fact that we feel joy in doing it. Mitzvahs are not to be looked at as burdens. Oh, another mitzvah. Oh, another bracha. That's what you want from me, God. And another Shemar Esrei. But no. Mitzvahs by essence are simcha because mitzvahs by essence mean connection. And that's how the Rav of Soloveitchik describes it so beautifully. He says that halachically, simcha arises from man's closeness to God. Simcha does not mean merely to rejoice and enjoy life. Both halachically and philosophically, simcha is expressed by one's becoming closer to God than he was a day before or even an hour before. Becoming closer to Hashem is in itself the source of joy that stimulates man and gives him a sense of happiness. And that's why we understand that famous statement of Rav Moshe, which is found on the pasuk "V'charta v'chayim l'man tichya atav zarecha," that you should choose life in order that you and your children should live. So explains Rav Moshe very beautifully the whole question of "V'charta v'chayim," of choosing life. The whole essence is found in the ability, in order for us to give it over to our children, in the ability to do mitzvot b'simcha, to do mitzvot with joy. That we understand that it's a privilege to be serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I want to get closer to God. And that when we do mitzvot, we should have the same geshmak, the same good feeling as the other pleasures we have in this world. The only way we'll be able to affect our students and our children is if they see a live model of someone who's been passionate about mitzvot. Then not only do we get excited by new furniture that's coming into the house or a new movie that came out, but we get excited about the ruchnius in the world. We get excited over a great shiur we heard. We get excited about doing the mitzvah of achnasat orchim. We involve the whole family in the mitzvah. The Shabbos table is the most beautiful experience that no kid would want to go out and be drinking Friday night somewhere. If the kids feel that Judaism has this simcha, has this joy, has this geschmack, has this spirituality, then kids aren't going to be going off on the street looking for other senses and other means of filling this vacuum of meaning and joy in their life. You know, I read a number of months ago in one of these parents' magazines something that really struck home with me. There was an article about how many times do we take little kids on errands that the errand revolves around, a business transaction revolves around money. And in thinking about it, I saw how true this is. Most of the time we take our kids for errands, we're going shopping, we're going to pick things up, we're going to fill a prescription. Most of the times it's using the Visa card, it's using the cash. I know when I say to Rachel, we're going on a tiyul, she says to me, La Brea Kosher, Office Depot, those are the first things she thinks about. Which is a problem. We really should be having our kids be involved in that tiyul, a little extravaganza. It's not only to go to the park, perhaps, and to buy things, but it should be involving the kids in doing acts of mitzvot, taking them to visit an old person, taking them to visit a sick person, helping them with other people, allowing the tiyul, allowing the experience to be an experience of growth that's not only buying and selling things. This is what we need to be able to inculcate within our children. This is what we need to be inculcate within ourselves, that there's a joy in doing mitzvot, and we spend our time and our energy on this as well. And this is how we have to bring up our children. With this in mind, we can understand on one level Leket Sichos Musar, the Slobodka Rosh Yeshiva explains why we read Kohelet on Sukkot. Kohelet, such a depressing book, has one major theme, and that is among this entire book of depression, Sof Davar, when all is said and done, when Akol Nishma et Elokim Yarev et Mitzvotav Shmor Kizek Kol Adam, what Kohelet is telling us, what the book is telling us, is that yes, this world in its absolute sense is vanities of all vanities, but look what an opportunity that we have, that we're able to elevate every part of this world for the service of God. And that's the simcha of living, that's the joy of living, that's the joy of mitzvot, the joy of elevation, the joy of closeness. And that's really what the sukkah represents, explains the Siftei Chaim. The sukkah represents the ability to sit in a little hut and are eating and are drinking and are sleeping. The mundane affairs of our lives become a mitzvah. The sukkah, on a symbolic level, represents our ability to transform life into mitzvah. It's a model for us for life. Kohelet's a model that what you have to do in perspective of this world is to be able to elevate this world into a godly experience. That the shopping is shopping for Shabbos Kodesh. And you go shopping, you say that we're buying things for Shabbos Kodesh. And what would be so special for Shabbos Kodesh? And a Shabbos Kodesh treat. Whatever it is, being able to elevate that which we're doing to a level of closeness to Kodesh Baruch Hu. I heard a wonderful mashal from Rabbi Friend on a recent tape that really gives us perspective of this type of simcha, this type of joy, and really the crux of what our lives are about. He said you could take two guitarists that play for a band at a wedding. One guy's approach is we have the music for the bezekin, we have the music for the chuppos, first dance, second dance, third dance, and the whole evening is, when am I going to get my paycheck and let me go home? Same routine, same song, same shtick night after night. The second guitarist says the same thing. It's the same bedekin, the same chuppah, the same first dance, second dance, third dance. But this guitarist says, you know, for me it's the same old night after night. But for this chassan and kala, for this bride and groom, this is their night. This is their wedding night. For them, this is the night they've been looking forward to all their lives. I'm going to play for them, having in mind to mesameach chassan and kala, to give joy to the chassan and kala, to give joy to the bride and the bridegroom. When such a person plays at the wedding, it's not just picking up a paycheck. It's a whole experience of simcha. It's a whole experience of joy. It's a whole experience of making two people happy. And to explain to my friend, you can imagine that after 120 years, these people get up to Shemayim, and one guitarist is sitting by the Kisei HaKavod, by the throne of glory, and one guitarist is out off in the bleachers. And the guitarist off in the bleacher says, "Hello, guy, what's going on here? We both played the same songs, the Badeke and the Chuppah, the first dance, the second dance. Why is one sitting close to you and I'm not?" HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "What was your intention? Was your intention to play to make the chassan and kawa feel good? Or was your intention to play in order to get a paycheck?" And this is really the approach that we can have for our entire lives. Whatever job we do, a lawyer, a doctor, a candlestick maker, are we doing it in order to help people? Are we doing it to make the world a better place? Are we doing it to put our kids to a school? Or are we doing it in order to make the next buck, the next paycheck? Our whole lives, we can elevate our focus into something that's doing the will of God. Our whole lives, we can elevate everything we do to this simcha, this joy of getting closer to God. That's the message of Sukkot on the first level. The message of Sukkot is a message of closeness, the joy found in not only God forgiving us, but reinstating that relationship through mitzvah. How do we achieve such a level? So that's the symbolism of the water. Explains the Slomina Rebbe in the Nesiva Shalom that Mayim is morel midat ahava. Water reflects love. Right? We know that fire is din, is justice. Water is love. V'nisuach hamayim hayat gilui ahava ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'Yisrael. This pouring of water is showing the deep love the Jewish people and God have one for each other. When we pour out this water and we see the love that God has for the Jewish people, there's no greater simcha than this. There's no greater joy than this. And that's what we say in our davening, V'titein lanu Hashem Elokeinu, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us be'ahava, with love, mo'adim u'simcha, v'chagim u'zmanim u'sason, times to rejoice. It's feeling that love of God. It's the great people, the rabbis, the scholars, who are on a level of really appreciating it. And therefore, they were the ones who danced. It's feeling that love of God, that pouring of the water. When we see that water being poured, when we see that love of God toward the people, so that we respond by saying, "We want to come close to you, God. We want to respond. We want to reciprocate that love." That's the mitzvah. That's the simcha. That's the connection. That's the first level of Sukkot. Sukkot is the time to appreciate mitzvot, appreciate that closeness to God. Then there's a second level of Sukkot. And as I mentioned, really, the same coin on the second side. Notes from my foyer in a beautiful essay in Seasons of the Soul that true joy is rarely experienced. You would ask people, how many people are really happy? You won't get too many people who say they're really happy. Most people are involved in the pursuit of happiness, yet happiness seems to elude them. For happiness results from the realization of ambitions and aspirations, and how often do these remain woefully unfulfilled. Man fancies himself a sculptor, carving for himself a self-image of personal success. Man attempts to be a designer, fashioning an elaborate blueprint for achievement and satisfaction. But the drama of life seldom follows the man-made script. More often, frustrations and grief are man's lot, simply because the divine fate ordained for every individual does not necessarily coincide with the destiny man has chosen for himself. And that's why David HaMelech, a person who was really beset by tragedy, was yet one of the happiest of men, provided a formula for maintaining a mood of unabated joy in spite of adversity. He taught that to achieve happiness, man must abandon its pursuit. Let man humbly submit himself to the hands of God and declare, "My Lord, you choose what is best for me. Please take my hand and lead me." This is really the message of Sukkot. The message of Sukkot is to be able to let go to that figure, that model we have so strong in our heads, and let God take over. And that's what, on a symbolic level, the Sukkah represents. We know in Rav Dessler's essay, which is adapted by Rabbi Wolpin, he speaks about that on Sukkot, man is instructed, leave your personal, permanent home and take shelter in your temporary dwelling. Living in a Sukkah is an instruction in the transitory nature of all life's mundane experiences, a negation of the material, the bitul hayesh. When the Jew in the Sukkah ponders life in this thrown-together hut, he realizes that nothing's of permanence in this world. The joys and comforts of the home are inaccessible, and even the modest creature comforts of the sukkah are only of short duration, and such is life itself. Striving for material possessions, for fulfillment of passions, desires, and petty pleasures becomes revealed as a hollow pursuit. If man is to strive for anything of worth, it must be a spiritual attainment, because only in the realm of the spirit do gains have any permanence. Only a spiritual existence can give man authentic pleasure and lasting satisfaction, and this is the lesson of the sukkah. We live in this world of illusion. My car, my home, my artifacts, my prestige bring me joy. That increased happiness lies in winning away from others their precious attainments. What the sukkah comes to remind us is that life is about the way we carve our home. We carve our lives as symbolized by our home. So, the shadow of God. This is sukkah under God's protection. We understand life is about being in God's hands, not being in our hands. Kadosh Baruch Hu provides for us the comfort and the protection of life and direction of life, and it does not come from ourselves. The sukkah then can rightfully be described as the protective shade of faith. Beneath its sheltering roof, the blinding attractions of falsehood disappear. In its shelter, the Jew becomes liberated from the shackles of conventional thought and dares aspire for more, reaching for greater spiritual growth. It's governed by an inner peace. And that's why it's no accident, as Sifrei Chaim notes, that what we make our sukkah with is the psolet. It's the leftovers of the garden and the yakev. It's the tree trimmings that are taken off the tree, that's what we make our sukkah with. We know that now, that recently the people were cutting the trees, in L.A. And you had carloads following these different people who were putting out the leaves for garbage in order to pick them up for a schach for their sukkah. It's almost a funny type of sight. Here people are throwing out garbage, and people are running with their cars afterwards who can get more schach from them. But on a deeper level, this is what life is all about. That which we think protects us is not what protects us. It's the flimsy stuff that you've sheared away from the tree, that's what's going to be your protection. It's ultimately God going to be your protection in this world, and not that which we think protects us. When we sit in the sukkah on Sukkot, it's a reminder to us to focus on what's really meaningful in life. We've just gone through Rosh Hashanah, we've just gone through Yom Kippur, we've been able to really try to align our goals on a spiritual level. And in fact, that's what the Leket Sichos Musar says. That's why we read Kohelet on Sukkot according to one approach of Yitzchak Blazer. Because on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Elul, we're on such a high spiritual level. And we say to God, even if this world had all these wonderful benefits for it, we wouldn't care. All we care about is the spiritual connection to you, God. Right? Meloch HaKolom Kolo B'Chodecha. All we want is Malchus, God's kingship. So then we read Kohelet, and we find in Kohelet, that indeed the world has no physical benefits to it. Everything is hevel. That gives us great simcha. Because here we were ready to give up everything in order to do the spiritual closest to God. Now we find out you don't have to give up so much. Because the whole world is hevel itself. All that counts is a spiritual connection to God. All this counts is that spiritual closeness to God. To achieve real simcha, to achieve real joy, after Rosh Hashanah, after Yom Kippur, we immediately have Sukkot. Take the lessons of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur immediately and put them into yourselves. Be able to integrate this message for 7 days. It's the message of what really counts in life, where you'll find real happiness in life. The Nesiv HaShalom gives a wonderful mashal to this. Gives the mashal of a king who gets very sick. And the doctor says, the only way you'll be cured is if you wear a coat of somebody who has no worries. So the king said, great. He asked his advisors, go find me a person with no worries and let me put his coat on. They searched far and wide, up and down the kingdom. There's no person without worries. The king is desperate. There must be someone without worries. They finally find an individual who has no worries. They said, great, quick, give us your coat, we'll put it on the king. The person says, I'm sorry, I have no coat. If I had a coat, I would have worries. Very deep mashal, right? Marbin nechassim, marbin daika. The more possessions we have, the more worries we have. This is what life is all about. Life is about this insurance and that insurance, and to procure more and more and more. Sukkot comes us to a complete halt after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and say, internalize what you spend hours in shul saying. Life is about finding relationship with God. Life is about spiritual values. Life is about spiritual meaning. Sukkot is a time to sit up and look up at that schach, look up at that stuff that we picked up off the ground and say, Kadosh Baruch Hu is what protects me. And think about the images in our own mind that we have of our success in our lives. And think about events in our lives, recent events, where we think we'd have been successful and we weren't. And how we have to really integrate and internalize that life is not up to us. Sukkot is that ability to be able to appreciate on the deepest level what Simcha is. Simcha is being able to give ourselves up to God. What's the key to do this? What's the key to our success? That's once again the water. Rabbi Feuer notes that Shmuel HaNavi taught the Jewish nation the true meaning of submission. And in an effort to inspire spiritual renewal, Shmuel gathered together all the people in the mitzvah, and at his command, they drew up water and poured it before God. They poured their hearts out like water in order to repent before God. They humbly submitted themselves to God and proclaimed, "We stand in your presence like uncontained water spilled out." What is the symbolism of pouring out water, the Nisuach HaMayim? Water is the epitome of something which is a liquid. For liquid is best described as a substance with no form of its own, but which conforms to the shape of its container. Nothing fits this description quite like water. Submission. Melt down your masterpiece. Dissolve your personal design. Pour out your heart in an amorphous, shapeless mass and plead with the Almighty. Please, you give my existence a shape and a purpose. My identity is lost in your presence, that my true self may be found. I drown myself in your being, that my essence can emerge. The pouring out of the water in the Simchas Beis HaShoeva was the ability of the people to pour out in front of God this concept of submission, that we give of ourselves completely to you, God. It's the model of the David HaMelech Kigamula Le'imo, the nursing child, where the nursing child knows that the mother protects the child, the mother provides for the child, and as long as the child is in its mother's arms, life is perfect, life is wonderful, life has that protective feeling. That's the sukkah. The sukkah is the model of a little child nursing from its mother. Sukkah is the model of the total submission where we are surrounded by God and understand that He's really running the show in our lives, not us. The model of Kohelet. And that's why, continues Rabbi Feuer, as long as the person concerns himself with the figure he cuts as he dances and thinks about the image he projects as he sings, he's worrying, not rejoicing. Erase yourself. And that's, in fact, the root of simcha is macha, to erase. If you want to rejoice, you have to forget about yourself. Erase yourself. Only then will you relax, relieved of that terrible burden of self-concern that you drag around with yourself. Unshackled, release your feet, will dance lightly, your voice will soar free. And that's why it was the foremost scholars and saints, the heads of Sanhedrin, the Rosh Yeshiva, only they were permitted to perform. Because it was these people who have the ability to put aside their status and positions and titles, the external trappings of society, and they plunge themselves into the sacred aspect of dancing and singing and being merry in front of God. This is what we're speaking about, is the essence of Sukkot. The essence of pouring out that water with such joy. It's the ability of the submission in front of God. And Rabbi Feuer notes is a very interesting model, that perhaps this water is really symbolic of the teardrops that we shed over Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's as if we collect all those teardrops and we pour out this water, we're pouring out our tears. Because we should never underestimate the power of the tiny teardrop. It's one of the mightiest forces in the universe. It can tear and shatter human pride. In a moment of truth, man realizes the futility of his own design and the self-image of his own creation crumbles. He breaks down in tears and surrenders himself to a higher will. As Rav Shimshon Fall Hirsch calls tears, the sweat of the soul. Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the pouring of the water, the pouring of the submission, perhaps the pouring of our tears at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when we understand reality so clearly, is the second aspect of the Simcha of Sukkot. The Simcha of Sukkot is the second side of the same coin, its relationship with God. We are on the first level. Sukkot is about understanding the beauty in doing mitzvot, how mitzvot attach us to God, how each mitzvah brings us closer, and we're so happy that we have the opportunity to do mitzvot right after Yom Kippur, to be reinstated in a close relationship with God, because that's the ultimate simcha in life. And the second side of the coin, Sukkot is about looking at our own personal lives. The person who has no worries is the person without the jacket. Life is about worries. Life is about the difficulty in finding this simcha and finding this true joy. How do we break out of this? How do we allow ourselves to be able to find joy within this world around us? It's definitely through giving ourselves over to God. It's kagamul aleimo. It's the image of the nursing child. It's the image of the sukkah that surrounds us, that protects us, that reminds us of what the importance of life is, that really God's running the show. If we're able to submit ourselves, break down the water in this respect, so then we'll achieve this inner serenity, this inner simcha. Just like to close with a book that I heard quoted on my friend's tape. The book, I believe, called Surprisingly Jewish, which was written after Albright's discovery that she was Jewish. So this person interviewed quite a number of people who found out later in life that they were indeed Jewish. And their experiences of waking up surprisingly Jewish. But the author ends the book with the following question. Let's say one day you woke up and found you weren't Jewish. How would you feel? And the author writes how she would still every Friday put out a white tablecloth and have the family sit around and talk, and how she would still celebrate Yom Kippur at the time of closeness to God, and how her life would be totally destroyed, and the agony she would have knowing that she wasn't Jewish. And I think that this is what Simcha of Sukkot is all about, the pride of closeness to God, the pride of Asher Atah Bachartanu, that you have chosen us, the Keravtanu Malkeinu L'Avodasecha, and you brought us close to your work, God, and be able to serve your Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Simcha of Sukkot on the heels of Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah is the Simcha being reinstated in the closeness of God, and the Simcha being able to say so clearly that our spiritual values are really the correct values, and that we have to take the message of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and allow it to surround us on Sukkot, that our ultimate joy is to be able to submit ourselves ultimately to God, where He ultimately runs the show and not as we understand it. As we sit in that sukkah and we take pride in the ability to serve God, let's also feel that feeling of comfort, of knowing that we're surrounded by God, and that is indeed the true simcha, the true joy, the true shleimus, the true sense of completion.